When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Lather Talk. This is John, aka Lather Hog, and we have quite the show for you today. Gerard and I recently got to talk to Sean Mayer of Mayer Olfactive and Chachinon Luke's. We had such a great time getting to know Sean better, but before we get into that interview, I just want to share some ways that you can help support the podcast. One way you can support us is through our newly launched Patreon page. So for as little as $3 a month, you'll get access to a bunch of bonus and behind-the-scenes footage and much more. We're kind of in the process of figuring it out. Some new patrons that have signed up since the last episode include Nate Bauermeister of BBS Live. Thank you so much, Nate. Thank you to Philip Tremblay of the Canadian Mafia Show. Thank you so much for your support, Philip. Thank you to Dante, aka Sensory Overload, who is a regular on our Discord chat. And last but not least, thank you to Arvin Lucio, who is one of our moderators on the Discord chat and all-around great guy. Thank you guys so much for signing up. If you're curious about how you can join our Patreon page, just go over to patreon.com/lathertalk. Once again, that is patreon.com/lathertalk, and you can find out the different pricing tiers and what are the bonuses with each tier. One other way you can help us financially for the podcast is checking out our newly launched merchandise page. Who doesn't love some fresh merch, right? You can show off your love of the podcast with some super comfy t-shirts or perhaps a new coffee mug / brush soaker. You can find more information about either of those items and future items at lathertalk.com. Again, you can check out our merchandise at lathertalk.com. We also just want to say thank you to our listeners at home, whether or not you can contribute financially. We know that it's not in everyone's budget, and that is no problem at all. Other ways to help support Lather Talk is if you are watching this on YouTube, hit that like button and become a subscriber if you haven't done so already. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can help us out by leaving a 5-star review. Thank you guys so much. We appreciate your time, your support, and now let's move on to the interview. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Lather Talk. Today, for the first guest of season 3, we have Sean Mayer. You may know him from Chatillon Luke's or Mayer Olfactive. He is a perfumer and maker of wet shaving and men's grooming things. Sean, welcome to Lather Talk.
Well, thanks for having me. I didn't know this is the inaugural episode. That's a big deal.
You're our first guest. We did record one before just to kick off the season, but you have the honor of being the first guest on for season 3.
I'll take what I can get, you know.
Well, we're very happy to have you on. Glad you could carve some time out of your busy schedule just before we start rolling. We did mention we were talking and catching up with Sean. He just came back from vacation. I don't know if you want to share a little bit of where you went and kind of quick highlights.
Yeah, like honestly, I think they should give me a little kickback because I'm going to like push it so hard. But I went to Jackson Hole and it was amazing. Like it was cool. And like the cool thing was it's like that shoulder season. So it's not like ski season yet, but it's also not like summer season anymore. So like we got this like luxury condo for super cheap, like that Snow King Mountain. Definitely like it was really cool. And it's like right there in the town. It's like I was saying, like the Grand Tetons are just basically like your mind is blown, like you'll just stare at it for hours and still not comprehend how awesome it is. But yeah, I totally highly recommend Jackson Hole. It was incredible.
Awesome. Sounds like a great time. And again, their tourism bureau, you know, you can look for Sean's details to compensate him properly.
Do they have a budget for a tourism bureau?
I don't know. But, you know, if anyone's listening from those parts, definitely, you know, give Sean his props there. But so we mentioned, you know, there's a lot to get on today's show. In particular, like we love talking about the just perfuming, and you know, like that's your thing, but just like how it ties back to scent memory, even just, you know, just a little preview for ahead, we're gonna get into like how, you know, Sean's creation process and even just make some history, because he's got a lot of scents under his belt, and you know, and rightfully has been acknowledged, awarded for, you know, for many of those creations. So I try to do a little research. Saw that Châtillon Lux was started in 2015. Mm-hmm. And it definitely got to mention your native St. Louis is the, I don't know, it's very foundational. It seems to be a lot of the inspiration for those scents. And correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, but the first scent that came was, I might butcher the name, is it Gratio League Square or Gratio League Square?
That was one of the first ones. That was like, so I had like an initial run, and it was the Lord de Tujer, Catalan's Prairie, and Vide Poche. And then Gratio League Square came like right on the heels of that. So that was like the first one after the initial. I feel like Gratio League Square was the first one where I was like, I'm really starting to get the hang of like how perfuming works, you know?
So, gotcha. So my research was incorrect. I apologize.
I honestly, I wrote this down a little while back because I kept forgetting when stuff came out and people would ask me. I was like, I got to figure this out because I have no idea.
To just piece together your own history.
Yeah, I know. I was like, I did it at one point. I know I did, but I can't tell you when or what.
It's all good. I think we have a somewhat working, you know, timeline for it. I think that's fine. And so that was back in 2015, and thanks for putting, you know, that initial lineup out there. And then more recently, 2020, you spun out and came up with Mayor Olfactive to kind of really go hard for you know, scenting, perfuming, and just kind of this whole other world. And I'd love to hear more about kind of, was it a difficult transition to go from, you know, that wet shaving grooming space into the world of perfumery?
Well, it kind of was like a weird thing. Like it was like, so I kind of like had what Mayor Olfactive originally was like Châtillon Luxe Parfums. So I tried to like, I kept on trying to be like, I'm trying to walk the line. I was trying to do two things in one, you know, and it was like trying to, I was like, I want to stay true to the wet shaving people, but I also like want to do this thing that's like pure perfume for the art of like perfume and like just really blowing it out, exploring like really, you know, rare and expensive materials I couldn't really afford to put in a shaving soap. Somebody wants to pay, you know, $50 for a shaving soap. So like, it was like, and I was trying to like walk the line, and Dave from American Perfumer, who's kind of like a confidant and like a buddy of mine, he was like, you know, have you ever thought about separating your lines? And I was like, well, yeah, like actually I have a lot. And so it kind of made sense that I kind of come out with this new thing that was just like something that like was, cause Châtillon Luxe is all about, you know, St. Louis. It's all about, inspired by the history of St. Louis. But like, also just sometimes I wanted to like be like, hey, I really want to explore like narcissists. Like and I'm not really inspired by the history. I just want to like be like, this is a beautiful natural material and I really want to explore it. So it was kind of like, I wanted to go and like start this other thing. And I just felt like it's good to have like a cutoff. Like this is Châtillon Luxe is like, like the stuff you can put, it works really well in like grooming like items. It's like, can be affordable enough compared to other people. Like, you know, I know it's not like great compared to like a multi-billion dollar corporation, but for like someone like me, who's a one man show and doesn't have the quantity discount that like maybe a big corporation could, I want to try to make it as affordable as possible. Cause I want to let people into like the niche fragrance world without having a barrier to entry. But at the same time, you do want to explore these like really cool materials. So like, I wanted to have something that felt like, this is different and this is why. And it's just easier to say, like, if this is this, this is that, like, it was getting really confusing. So I kind of wanted to just, have it avenue where I could just really open it up and be like, see what I could do with, you know, whatever I wanted to try, just have fun with it, you know?
Gotcha. Gotcha. And just to backtrack a little bit, just because we've been mentioned St. Louis and how that really was driving a lot of the scent creation for Chateau and Luke's, for like, in your own words, for someone who's never visited St. Louis, how would you characterize your city?
I would say it's cliche to say it's the gateway to the West. That's kind of a whatever thing. I like to say it's the last East Coast city or the first West Coast city. So it's like this weird mishmash of like, we have a lot of red brick. We have like, it's more urban dense compared to a lot of Western cities. But at the same time, it's like, it was a place where a bunch of cultures like came together. And then like, so there's this like a lot of people, like a lot of things just kind of like wove together to form this weird, like, unique culture. Like, so like we have this thing called Missouri French or Pawpaw French or Prairie French. And it's like, we really butcher a lot of French language because there were so many different cultures that came together, mm-hmm. bastardized the language. And now it's this totally different thing. So like, you know, we'll have like so many different words or streets that like, when I, like, you'll see it and you'll think this has to be like de Balvier. It's like, no, it's de Bolivar. And that's the way we say it around here. And, you know, stuff like that. But it's like this weird, unique little spot where you can go and everything's like, there's more culture than you would ever think. We have a ton of like chefs that have been nominated for James Beard Awards. We have a ton of free attractions, like one of the best zoos in America for free, like a great art museum, all this stuff in Forest Park where the World's Fair happened. And it's just a place where you can go, you can visit, you can, and you can be as like, Forest Park right behind you. So it's like a place where you can go and you can like have, you can like just really explore. You can see the big level things. You can like, neighborhoods are very, very well defined and they're like cultures. So you can like go to like South Grand and you have like a bunch of really great restaurants and like dining, or you can go to like, you know, where I'm at in like Benton Park and see a bunch of great history in the Anheuser-Busch. Like, and so it's just like, it's a city that I think the more that you explore it, the more it rewards you. And it's just a great place to go because it's just like so laid back and people are just like, you know, it's like a Midwestern place, but at the same time, it's got like really great like art and cultural history.
Well, you've definitely sold me. I gotta go visit St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. St. Louis Tourism Board.
Okay. Yes, you know, I guess this is the
Jackson Hole, you guys,
podcast gotta, now. Yeah.
I expect he's in the show.
That was totally not my intention to, to turn, but that's great. No, but I mean, honestly, that definitely painted it such a great light. It reminded me because as Gerard mentioned, he recently came out to Boston to visit me, and just kind of hearing from him the description. And kind of, you said were either the last East Coast city or the first West Coast city. The red brick, the kind of like that. Just like the age of everything, the age of a building. When was it built? Like, yeah, that thing's over 100 years old, you know. Like, or
it's so cool to see a place, just look at a building and be like, because like in my area too, I'm in a place that was built in like 1912 and stuff, and it's just like cool to see all these buildings, and they have plaques outside, they see the history, and you're like, everywhere you turn, you're like, that's got like more, and like, I know it's not thing compared to Europe or whatever, but like, still, it's so amazing to feel like part of a place that's just got so much history behind it. It's just so much fun. I love the West Coast, but it's sometimes that is lacking every once in a while where you're like, man, I still love to feel that old history.
So, yeah, I was telling John about this, like the things that I noticed about, you know, Boston were like, they were things I wasn't really anticipating on noticing. Mm-hmm. The bricks and the architecture and everything like that, but just like I said, road design, you know, like mm-hmm. Boston's like almost, you know, the area in general is almost 400 years old, right? You know, like 300 years old, and so it's so easy to tell that these roads were not made for cars. Mm-hmm. They were made for horses and carriages, and they just put asphalt and they're just like, all right, figure it out.
Yeah,
you know, like And I'm just like, oh, yeah, like, of course they would, because, you know, here in California, it's like this soulless grid system, mm-hmm. you know, where we have like 10 lanes per, you know, going east and west, you know, and stuff like that. So, I was just very in a good way. Like, it was just one of the things I noticed. It's one of the things I kind of look forward to when I travel, you know, just all the things that I probably wouldn't have, you know, imagined, you know, just going to a place. But yeah, it definitely sounds like St. Louis has a, like you said, a little bit of both, you know, where it's kind of, you know, maybe East Coast like roots, but like vision of the West Coast, I guess, mm-hmm. yeah, like, and stuff like that. So yeah, sure. Looking at pictures, I've looked at pictures and stuff like that. It's like, you know, really beautiful and everything. And yeah, it sounds like a very underrated place for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's tough because it was also a city that like tried to become West Coast in a way that like they put a bunch of like interstate highways like right in the middle of the city, and it encouraged like some like urban sprawl that really decimated some areas in the city. And there are some things mm-hmm. where like there's a lot of urban renewal now. It was kind of desolate for a little while, so it's not perfect, but I feel like you know, there are upsides to being stuck between the two cultures, downsides to being stuck between the two cultures. And it's not a perfect city by any means. I'm not going to try to, but I mean, there's a lot of, but yeah, it's like anything. Like, I think even the bad stuff you can learn from, and you see it and you like, you move forward and you realize why you made the mistake. And, you know, it's not perfect, but yeah, I think there's, even in its imperfections, I think it's really interesting to explore, I think.
For sure. Kind of just pivoting a little bit. I do want to get into your background. So as far as day job goes, mm-hmm. is it still correct that you're a ad agency copywriter?
Yeah. That's what I'm doing whenever it's like 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, but and probably actually later than that a lot of days, unfortunately, but you know, it pays the bills, and there's a lot worse things to do with your life, that's for sure.
Well, I also saw that you were a musician, and mm-hmm. I kind of tried to dig around just to see, you know, like what that constituted of, and I couldn't find too much. So I was wondering if we could talk about a little, you know, like what instruments do you play, or like, do you still compose music currently?
No, I play guitar, I play trumpet, I played trombone throughout school, and I came through Ooh. The whole thing. And then whenever I like was in bands, I played guitar, I played bass in some bands, I played trumpet. And in my main band, I played like guitar and trumpet. And, you know, I loved doing it, but it was like, I hated dealing with drummers. I hated getting all the practices together. I hated like trying to coordinate everything and be like, and book shows and like try to like coordinate all the logistics of everything. Cause it's like a lot like perfuming or starting a wet shaving company. You think you come up with this cool product. You're like, I was creative. I came up with this thing. And then people are like, cool. But you have to do so much more beyond just coming up with that awesome thing. You have to like do so much. And you find out it's like doing the creative process is such a small part of the actual like business. Yeah. But, so like I enjoyed it, and I just kind of like, but at the same time, I'm one of those people, if I'm not trying to achieve a goal, I don't really get motivated to do it. So I have a guitar sitting out, but it's got dust all over it. You know, I'm all about like trying to achieve a goal, I guess. I'm a little too type A maybe once in a while, you know?
So, okay. So you were a gigging musician that, I mean, you know, it wasn't just like punking around at home. You were playing mm-hmm. in bands and bars.
Yeah, that's actually, it's a shame. The reason I haven't been to Boston yet is because whenever we had a show fall through in Boston on like the East Coast tour that we did and stuff, and I'm saying it's one of my great regrets, because we went up there and we went up through Pennsylvania, all that stuff, and
yeah,
in New Jersey, and we played New York City and Brooklyn and stuff, but we had a show fall through in Boston, and I ended up hanging out in New York a couple extra days, but it's on my list, and I definitely need to make it up there. But yeah, it was cool because we weren't like huge and we weren't super successful, but we got some free vacations out of it, you know, saw some stuff I'd never see, you know, if I didn't, and didn't have to pay for it. So, you know, so it's almost worth sleeping on floors and dealing with, you know, drummers. Again, no offense to the drummers, but oh my goodness.
Wow, Sean, you really hate the...
percussionists are a different breed of people.
They truly are.
It's true. Well,
and now I just realized as that left my mouth that there are some listeners who are legitimate musicians, both percussion and other and other things as well. So
it's okay. I mean, they should though.
I think even a drummer who is self-aware knows that drummers are a different breed of people. They live on a different planet, and God bless them. But you know,
I played woodwinds in high school. I played sax and clarinet. And
okay.
So, and then I realized, like, I'm good. I have some skill, but I don't want to pursue this as a profession. So then that was it. The chops went away shortly thereafter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny how quick it goes. You work so hard, and then suddenly it's just gone within a couple months.
Well, if you definitely make it up in the Boston area, definitely let me know. Get you a beer, or you know, get some great food, some nice options. Sorry, it didn't work out. There's a lot of great. I do like love all the small venues that are here, or small mm-hmm. medium venues, because it's just nothing beats that intimate show. Mm-hmm. I meant to ask. So, what genre was the band that you played with?
Well, it's funny. So like my main band is called The Short Histories of Powerful Nations. And it, believe it or not, if you hear about Shatune Lux, you will know that you shouldn't be surprised that it was about history. And it was history as allegory for like a political thing. And it was, yeah, so it's much in the same vein as Shatune Lux. And like, but it was music. And it was like kind of like a progressive, like, I don't know, like a, it's always hard to describe that kind of thing, but like mm-hmm. we liked the Mars Volta, we liked jazz, we liked
okay, influences. You know, yeah, you can describe it.
Yeah,
sorry about mm-hmm. that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, you're consistent at as
far as nothing else. I got to type.
Very nice. Now, how would you say? I mean, actually, not would you say, but yeah, you know, the correlation between composing music and composing a fragrance, like. There's so many parallels that can be drawn, but just like, you know, in a nutshell, like how would you describe that correlation?
Well, I think you really started to lead down that path. I think it made it such an easy transition for me when I started like making perfume for the first time. I was like, this is the exact same thing. You have to have all the building blocks. You have to have like the base, you have to have the middle, you have the like even like the melody up top that will be so influenced by how the base, like the if you have a melody and like the base, even though you don't notice it, it can influence so much how the melody like sounds. And if you change like the undercurrent, it can really change the melody. And like, it's so dependent on the whole thing. And I feel like once I started like looking how fragrance was composed, it just clicked with me. I was like, oh yeah, this is exactly like writing a song. And it's just such a great transition and great parallel. And I think that's why you get so many things like, you know, whenever you have different facets of a perfume, you call it notes. And you have like in bass, middle, top, just like in mm-hmm, like in mm-hmm. music, you have bass, middle, top. And like, you know, it's so much the same, I think, because, and again, like we were talking about earlier, the emotional reaction you have to perfume, and it evokes memories. And I feel like the only thing that comes close is music, in the way that music can like evoke that visceral reaction, that like emotional reaction that you don't have, like you don't process it just goes directly into your like system, and you just like have an emotional reaction without even being able to process or understand why and pull out a memory, you know. And I think that they're very much the same in that regard as well.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear. Really? But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
All right, so because we're talking about drummers and like, you know, like bandmates and basically people that we work with, collaborate with, I did want to touch upon, you know, one of your, in the world of wet shaving, kind of long time colleagues, collaborators. I'm not sure what you'd call it. Scott from Declaration Grooming. Mm-hmm. And you guys have worked together for as long as I've been wet shaving and a hobbyist and hobbyist and whatnot. Could you kind of share a little bit like how did that partnership first start?
Well, it's really funny because he had reached out to me and I'd seen him on like Reddit, like about talking about LML grooming, and I had ordered a soap from him, and like when he came out with his bison base, and he reached out to me and asked if like have you ever thought about like would you ever want to like put one of your scents in a soap? And I was like, he sent me the email, but I was like, I already ordered the soap. I don't want to answer the email until I try the soap, because like if the soap sucks, I'm not gonna like want to like go with this. And so like then I got it like a couple days after the email. I like rushed to shave with it, and it was really good. I was like, okay, hell yeah, let's do this thing. But we got to be friends, and you know, like I feel like we're kind of similar in our eccentricities, or like and we have some similar senses of humor. We're both laid back guys. I think it was just such a good fit. You know, we both have similar backgrounds and, you know, just what we like, how we like to go about things. So it's just like, it's almost effortless at this point. You know, we just, neither of us is like too worried about anything. We just get it taken care of. And it's just kind of nice, because like, it's such a complicated process if you could have someone you work so well with. And I say that, and I've worked with other people and they're great too, but it's just like, I feel like I'm also a pretty loyal guy. And like we go back and we work together, and it's like, why would I want to work with someone else? So like, it's kind of like, I mean, I enjoy working with other people. I guess I shouldn't say that, but it's just like when you have someone you work so well with, it's just like, it's such a perfect thing. Cause like, you know, it, in a world that's so complicated, it's so nice to have something you can trust, you know?
No, for sure. For sure. It's, I mean, it's
why mess up a good thing, right?
Exactly. Bingo.
That's definitely been a great, you know, on the consumer side, it's been a great, it certainly, you know, looks like a great relationship. The product scent experiences, shave experiences have been really top notch. Was it, forgive me for not knowing exactly, but was it in 2020 or more recently where like production of Châtillon Luxe like kind of shifted over to Declaration Grooming, taking care of like, you know, like aftershaves,
the post-shave products
rather. Yes.
Yeah, that was I think early 2020, and it's something I had been thinking about for a while, but I want to like put on Scott and be like, hey, I can't handle this production anymore. I suck at production. I know you're really good at it and you're very efficient. I'm very slow and terrible and I hate it, you know. And it's like my dread is like thinking about doing all this stuff, because and like I was like, and I just kind of like, it was taking me away. I was realizing I was like, you know, not being as creative as I wanted to, because I was so stuck in this and mired in the whole process of production. And, you know, especially being able to do it part-time, and he brought it up and I was like, dude, like, that's perfect. Cause like, I've been dreaming about like being able to freed up to like be more creative and like try to like focus on what I think I'm good at, and also like get away from what I'm bad at, which I think is just sitting down and like doing a production and filtering and bottling and doing all this stuff. And I'm just not suited for that kind of thing. I'm like more of a space case a little bit. I'll try to like, I'll be thinking about a formula. I'll be kind of like, mm-hmm. I'll be sitting around just doodling on a thing, thinking about what would go with this, how would this happen? And like, I'm not. And so to minimize the amount of production work I have to do and be able to focus on like, you know, I think I've been able to do like better work. And I think that his help is really, you know, even like with Mare Olfactive as well, it's just like being able to be freed up to do this work, I feel like has been such a huge thing. And I think it was a bummer to like get rid of the aftershaves. I enjoyed the aftershaves and I enjoyed the wet shaving market, but it's like, man, like sometimes I think you have to like let go of something and realize that like, you know, you have to, first of all, trust the people you work with, but also know and recognize when someone's strengths are better and they can make a better product and they can do better than you, and everything can be better if you just focus on what your strengths are and give up the things that you aren't good at. And it is a bit of an ego thing, but it is also you know, once you're able to get rid of the ego, you can just really be like, this is how we can really thrive, if you can just like put yourself aside and be like, what's the best thing for all of us here right now.
Gotcha. And I need to ask this just because a lot of our community members wanted to know, but is there any chance even in the slightest in the future where you're, you know, you might make again aftershaves, toners, or salves?
I mean, I would even- say about zero. Yeah. Like, I mean, I hate to say it. I don't want to, but it's just like, you know, like I honestly too, if you want to be like truthfully honest, it's not profitable. Like there was a point where I had quit a job and I was working 40 hours a week making aftershaves and not making enough to survive, you know? So it was like, so it's kind of like the thing where it's like, I just can't, like, I hate to say it, but it's like, I just need to be able to make a living. And it was like, and I feel, and I think, and it, again, maybe someone who is better at me at this, that whole like production thing, maybe if they were more efficient, maybe they were able to find better ways to go about it, because I'm sure that's a weakness of mine. But like, it just sucked because I was like, I'm working more than full time right now, but I'm also like, you know, not really, I was having to steal through freelance writing and stuff, trying to get, just make ends meet and stuff. And I was like, I think this is just not a sustainable model. And I think it's just easier if, you know, I think it's all centralized and stuff like that. So, I mean, like, you know, I mean, it would be cool to do, but I think if I were to produce aftershaves, I would need someone else to help me do it. And if I already have someone else helping me do it, then it's like, here we are, you know, we're back. I'm going in a circle again. And suddenly it always ends up back at Declaration Grooming. Well, Scott is the solution, you know, so.
Okay. I had to ask, but I mean, you know, given your answer to the previous question, like it seems like a really good, really good setup and freeing you up to do, you know, since that time you started Mayor Olfactive, that certainly requires needs. I'm sure you want to invest more time there in the, in that creation process. So thank you for humoring me with that question.
Yeah. Well, it's also too, remember we talked about how Shatiel and Luke started in 2015. I have not had a vacation since before 2015.
No.
And I just finally got to have my first vacation this past week.
So,
I feel like that's kind of like a earlier this year too, actually, I took like a long weekend, but those are the first times I've had like vacations since before Shatiel and Luke started. So like, that was pretty cool too, to be able to do that again, you know?
Oh my gosh. That's well-deserved, Sean. I'm glad you're able to take that. Like, is a week long? More or
I wasn't quiet. I came in the office on Monday, but we left on Tuesday night, you know, and close enough.
Still, a proper vacation, regardless of the
it was incredible. I loved it. Yeah.
Oh, that's so good to hear.
It's the quality of the time that you spent, not the quantity of days that you were gone.
No, it's very true.
And the cool thing was there was so little cell reception that like sometimes you're just like, oh yeah, no cell phone. I guess I have to truly just unplug. And it was, that's such a nice thing. Cause again, like that's the one thing with having an artisanal company is you have to be on social media all the time. And I'm so bad at that already. To have an excuse to not do it, I was like, thank you. Thank you so much.
not a fan of the social medias?
I just kind of like,
it's exhausting.
It is. Yeah.
It's exhausting. I think I'm just saying this for myself, you know, and other things. It's like, you know, like personally, I have a shaving Instagram and then I have a personal. And I'm just like, the people that do this like full time and it's like a one man show, like I'm not even propagating in a product. I'm just like taking pictures of stuff, you know, I'm not selling, you know, or anything, but I'm just like, who does this? All like to be on top of it, you know, like some people do. It's crazy. It's so crazy.
And you want to like give people you want to interact with people and give them a genuine interaction too. It's the hard thing because like I want to go on. I don't want to just be like, hey, thanks, blah blah. I'm a fake guy, you know. I want to be like give you a genuine reaction and genuine like response and everything. But it's like at the same time, I feel like the thing with social media, like you said, it's so exhausting because you get sucked into this hole and you have to like, you get down and you're next thing you know, it's 2 hours later and you've been like just going through all your stuff and you're like, man, I was really needing to do this and this and this tonight. But like, so like, I know that I need to like get my essentials done before I get on social media because I'll wear myself out. I'll go down. Like I'm a kind of introverted dude already. So it's like, I'm not like, so it, like you have like that limited fuse of like, interaction before it's just like, oh man, this is like, I feel like I'm about to explode. I just need to like, you know, go read a book or something. So it's like, you know, But it's so it's hard because you really want to give people the part of the beauty and the thing I was attracted to about the artisanal like companies is you get to talk, you get to know personally the person who is doing the products, who is like their intentions behind everything, like their process, like who they are, their personality, stuff like that. And I think that's so cool. And it like really bonds you to a company, but at the same time, it's just so hard to put like all that out there. And I say that even as a person who works in like the ad agency and like business, I try to keep that out of there because I don't want it to become some fake brand. Like I've seen, I do that. That's my job. And I don't want to make that like what I love, you know? So it's like, so you want your social media to be genuine, but it's so exhausting to be genuine. And I think that's probably what you do on you all's like social media as well, because that's your whole thing is like you're facilitating community. And like, I'm like, if I try to do that as hardcore as you guys do, like, man, I'd be in like just worn out so hard. I can't even imagine that.
Social media is tiring, guys. So to sum up that portion. No, that's I do like the point that you made about authenticity and genuineness.
Yeah. If it's not a word, it is now.
Yeah, I mean,
being genuine.
Genuosity. That's definitely not it. But I think that is the, you know, with every new platform that comes out, you know, with TikTok now and other whatever, you know, by the time this publishes, you know, later in the week, some other platform will come out by then. But it's you're right. It's like people are curating their lives, right, and putting their best there, and it's not. That's all well and good, and like you said, yeah, I think your insight at, you know, being in an ad agency, and it's like, hey guys, this is not how it is 24/7, right? Mm-hmm. And I think just from you mentioned like you're active on Reddit. I feel like you come across, you know, very genuine on Reddit, and I dare say you don't pull your punches if on a discussion or debate. So I just want to validate that you're putting you out there.
Yeah, I kind of felt like that's the thing. If it's like good or bad, you kind of want to put it out there. And I'm a pretty opinionated guy, and like, you know, I've got, and I feel like yeah, I mean, I think it's really important you do that. And I think that's really the thing, like, you know, a national brand, a brand that you would find like in Home Depot or something, like, just let's just say, like, that's a brand that, yeah, you would need a curated brand, you would need a like strict voice, you would need it not to have personality, you need it to be bland. I totally get that, that's fine. But like, that's, I mean, not who I am. Like, I, that was a mistake I made early on with Chatting Looks too, is like, I was trying to do like ads and stuff like on social media and try to use stuff I used from like the ad agency, and just felt so gross and like it was not working that well. And I was like, you know what, that's what, and it hit me. I was like, that's what people want. And like, I know people want authenticity, but I didn't truly understand it until then. I was like, in this, like what we do, it's like, you just want a person, like for better or for worse, you want warts and all, you just want a person, and you want to be able to understand, like, this is just a, because that's the truth too. It's like, I'm just a person who is trying to balance this and this and this. And like, I'm not a company. I'm just a guy, you know? So that's what I'm just trying to be.
Very good. Very good. I can't, this topic got me thinking, and this might be just opening up a Pandora's box, right? But shifting gears more again to the fragrance side of things. I know my engagement as someone who likes fragrances, I actually watch quite a bit of like fragrance YouTubers. I don't know if you do, Sean, or not, but that it's okay. It's totally fine if you don't. Just letting you know, like that's kind of like, if I'm doing some research, I'll go check it out. But I know that one thing that online fragrance community a lot of times they talk about is the role of influencers, influencer fragrances, or even just like their role in like a new scent, whether that be designer, niche, indie, etc. I'm just wondering, like, as you stepped into this space, like really getting in the mix, like what's been your experience, I guess, with maybe that aspect, the influencer aspect for the fragrance world?
I mean, it's hard because I kind of partially, it's like just a personal thing. I don't want to be like too, I don't want to start thinking about trends and stuff and what's popular and what's not. I just kind of want to I kind of have people I trust and know and I'm friends with, and like, you know, they tell me what they're into and what they're not. It just makes it so much easier because I just don't want to like, I just don't want me to like start overanalyzing in my head because I'm an overthinker like quite often. I don't want to start thinking like, should it be more like this? Oh, this is really popular. Should I be doing this? Like, should I be looking at this in, like material? And it's like, it's not even like I'm trying to be popular. It's like, I'm just like, well, this seems really cool. Why does everybody like it? Should I explore it? Or like, I'd rather have a genuine curiosity. And there are like YouTubers and stuff who I like there's this channel Questioning Sense, but it's like, I became friends with him before I started watching his channel, you know, and we were like, okay. We interacted and then I started checking out his stuff and we have similar backgrounds. Like I played music, he managed bands and stuff. And so it's like, we had a thing to, you know, connect on and stuff. And I, like, I mean, there are people, even influencers like Mr. Clone 76, like I knew him, but like, I met him at like the, this thing in LA back in the old times when you used to do events and stuff, you know, like, and we became friends after that. And it's like, it just is so much easier for me to like, I kind of feel like I get so many like messages that all look the same, that are just like, you know, the form letters that the influencer sent everybody, and they want the bottles and they want you to like, you know, it's why the term collaboration just like really irks me, because like everybody like, you want to collaborate? I'm like, collaborate how? Like, what do you mean? Like how? I'm like, oh, you mean like send you a bottle? Like, that's fine, but that's not a collaboration. That's me like sending you free stuff for your review. Like it's sure. Like, let's make this word mean something again. And maybe that's partially me as a writer. So, you know, not how words being bastardized, but like, I'm just like, let's talk about our intentions. Let's just be honest with ourselves. And like, I don't have a problem. Like if I get to know somebody being like, hey, I got this new thing coming up. Love to hear what you think about it. But like, I just don't want it to be like, you know, try to be act like we're like friends and buddies and stuff and collaborators whenever you're just like a person who doesn't even follow me hitting me up wanting a free bottle.
Yeah,
I'm like, that's like fine, I'm like, good, shoot your shot, like that's cool, but that's not who I am, and you probably wouldn't even like it if you don't follow me and you just kind of like, you know, I've made that mistake, I went down that road too. And it's hard because like, you know, I think there's a lot of value in reviews and in people like criticism and stuff, and I think there is a role for like a quote unquote influencer if you do it well, because again, like I talk about Glenn, Mr. Clone 76, he's awesome and he keeps it very honest and he like runs a community and he does he's very very like concerned about doing things the right way, and like I think that's really cool and people do stuff like that, but it's just so hard because like, you know, those people do so much work and for good or for bad. And I just like, again, it's like one of those things I talk about social media. I still have time to keep up with it sometimes. So if I know someone personally, I have a relationship and I trust them, I feel like that's who I like to work with, but I'm just not open to going and talking with any person, you know, just like trying to, so it's such a hard line to walk that I said, like, I'm just going to default to being like, keep my close inner circle, you know, and not trying to get too deep into that influencer game, you know?
Don't do it. I'm just gonna say it right now.
I like to get that reinforcement that I'm on the right path.
John may or may not feel the same way.
No. I'm on board with you guys.
You put it pretty well out there, right? Like someone who's just like looking for free product, like, they're already, they're almost biased to talk good about it. Mm-hmm. Like just, you know, like why get something and then just like trash it, you know, like, or even if you don't really like it, like, are you going to give that honest opinion, you know, about it? It's kind of, I don't know. So, but yeah, no, I totally get it. Go ahead.
Some are wavelengths to you too, and some people aren't, you know. So sometimes it's like you don't have to collaborate with every single person. You know, you can have a niche community. Like, you know, you don't have everybody has to be on the same page too. That's fine. Like I think that's the cool thing about the internet. But yeah, that's the problem with some of those influencers. Like you said, they don't honestly evaluate, they kind of just read down the scent notes. They like regurgitate whatever is on your webpage, and then they're like, oh, that's not a review.
Hey, you know, but you have to follow the algorithm, you know, like,
yeah,
the algorithm. It's, you know, what is the scent of the algorithm?
Aventus.
What are your, or the 10 best summer fragrances this year.
All of this, all top 10.
Yeah. These are the top 10 Zoom meeting scents for you.
Yes. I personally have chosen Chateau Luke's West Egg. So may that emanate from your headphones or computer monitor.
Because I feel like old money. That's why, you know, all of you
feeling like Gatsby right now.
Piss ants over here.
Well, that's a deep dive. That's one of those for the real heads, you know, kind of thing where like, you know, because like that's the Weinstrasse, like the original one, like the in development one, the kind of like the, well, you might call it a remix or something, I guess, you know, because it's got the champagne and it's the white wine. So I feel like that's a cool deep dive showing that you're like in the know, the kind of like the.
It's a deep cut.
Yeah, deep cut.
I'm pretty sure I messaged you before. Sean, would you say it's like a flanker? They're flankers of each other?
Oh, no.
Yeah, or no?
No.
No. Did I just insult you?
You just suddenly, it's like you turned the mirror on me and I saw myself and I was like, oh no, I made a flanker.
No, what have I done?
As someone that has, well, I have the splash and for both they're different enough. They're winey, but yeah, champagne and the white wine. It's like, but they're like, it's like different grapes. You know what I mean? So at least that's what I remember. Cause I took both. I wanted to smell both. And yeah, like from my memory, I'm just like,
no, that's true. I use a lot more like that Cassis, like white currant in Weinstrasse that I didn't use in like West Egg. I think that's a big difference in the middle. Mm. And yeah, I think they are different. I think it was kind of fun because I was like working on the one and they were like, hey, could you make this in a couple of weeks? And I was like, yeah, but like, I'm going to need a jumping off point. And like, here's like, you know, so I kind of like was like, it having two parallel paths of development, like Weinstrasse and over here. And like, but it was kind of fun because I was like, it's kind of like, you know, working on two different ideas at the same time. They're close enough, but not quite. So it was kind of fun to like experiment, to like make an experiment on both of them at the same time and see how it worked. And it was kind of it was fun. So maybe flankers aren't bad after all. I don't know. You know,
so that actually related to a question that someone had asked us to ask you. Are you bringing back West Egg or any other discontinued scents?
Probably not. Like West Egg was like a exclusive and it was part of that release. And I feel like it's kind of like the sacrosanct to the Reddit thing. And it was made specifically for that fun thing. I guess like, you know, I kind of like, I have cool ideas I feel like that I want to move forward with. And like, you know, I just kind of like some of the, it's tough because I like to give people what they want. I like to know that people enjoy what I do. So I don't want to sound like I'm like not like really appreciative of someone enjoying something I made, because I totally am. But at the same time, it's like, man, I just had, it's you just like to move forward sometimes and you kind of like,
you don't want to rest on your laurels, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's like Rolling Stones came here recently and I was just like, how are you still playing? You can't always get what you want like 50 years later. Like
drugs. That's why they're still playing.
Yeah.
And wheelbarrows, I mean, just full of money.
Yeah.
That they just dump in front of them as they take their walkers. And
I mean, they're one of my favorite bands of all time, but man, I was like, that has to be so crazy to just play the same song you wrote I guess like that 60 years ago.
Yeah, like a lifetime ago. Yeah.
That's wild. That is wild. That's 60. It is 2021, 60 years ago. That is so crazy to think.
And like, how do you feel those emotions that you felt when you wrote that song? Like as like a 20 something year old to be like, I'm feeling these emotions about something. And then when you're 60 something, you're like, yeah, that's stupid. I was such a dumb kid. But like, you know, to like be able to relive that, it feels so hard to do. Like to do it authentically. I feel like they do. Mm. Like, I'm not trying to bash on them. Mm-hmm. Like I'm jealous of my friends who went to see them. But at the same time, like, you know, it's like, I feel like that would feel so forced to just to like relive something like that.
Mm. I just imagine that scene from Zombieland where he's just like wiping his tears with like stacks of money. Is it Zombie? Yeah. Was it Zombieland? I think it was Zombieland.
Yeah, it was Zombieland. Yeah, yeah.
It's a good visual either way.
And there's also that. See, I mean, quote unquote, you know, you can sell out a concert or sell out, you know, in like real life, right? I also think about Metallica. Mm. And there's like that picture of them like stepping out of like the Prada store with like bags of just, it's either like were they in like Rodeo Drive or somewhere, like maybe somewhere up in San Francisco, or they're just like boutique shopping. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is the band that did Kill 'Em All, Master of Puppets, and they're just like now like middle-aged, and they just have the money to build the life, why not, you know? Mm-hmm. You're right, like when they go and play a show, is it that same emotional connection that they did when they first put pen to paper, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how they square that circle. And I mean, I'm not trying to judge them. I don't understand how you could do that and be the same person that you were. Like, I mean, and I feel bad for bands like that too, because it's like, I'm always so disappointed. I'm like, man, they got so bad when they sobered up. But good for them for sobering up and like getting their lives together. But man, they were so much better when they had their lives in a total mess, you know?
Creatively, right? Like, the chaos, you know, like sounded better as a fan. But here's the other thing, right? You know, when you first listen to them, like you're in a different spot, you're in a different space. You know, you talk in kind of talking about that music element, is, you know, going back to it, it's just like, I think someone else said this, but like, you know, when you hear a song that you liked when you were younger, it's like going back into that time machine, right? Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. And sometimes you'll go to you know, maybe you'll see them like, here we are years later, they don't sound the same because they're not the same person that recorded it, you know, when they were fresh in the studio 20, 30, 60 years back. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's just, it's different. And I think it's fair to just not, not look at it with the same type of expectation, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think that's a really good point. And I think that's tough because sometimes you want the person to be stuck in the time period that you love it and you remember and you feel so emotionally connected to it, but you have to realize that people grow and move on. And it sucks because I do that too. Like I'll go see a band, I'm like, man, I did not like this new direction, but you know, good for them because they followed their dream, like they followed their instincts, they followed what they loved, they followed their passion. But man, it's just hard for me because, like, you know, I've missed the thing that I fell in love with.
It's okay, you can always revisit it on Spotify.
Yep.
Where's my check, Spotify? That's Spotify. Yeah. So
this podcast is on Spotify, so you better respect put some respect
that
on that
is
name.
that's right Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm just playing.
Eat that apple.
we're available on all podcast platforms.
Oh, well, then Apple. Love Apple. Yeah,
great job, Apple. Great job.
Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. We are on
Stitcher, the Spotify. Yeah,
Stitcher, Anchor. What else?
MySpace,
Pocket Casts.
I joke. I'm basic AF. I have an iPhone. I listen to iTunes and I listen to Apple Podcasts. I start seeing all these other technologies. I'm like, that's great. But like, you know, it's already on my phone.
You're in the ecosystem. That's the thing.
It's okay. I'm there with you, Sean.
Yeah.
No shame. No shame in that. Yeah. Gerard, since you did share one of the listener questions, why don't we go ahead and dive into some listener questions?
I'm just kind of like, I'm kind of scrolling and stuff like that. I mean, we talked a little bit about.
Yeah, this first one, though, I did want to dive in. I know there's a few things we want to get to and some great questions. These are coming, Sean, from the community members in our Discord server. So thanks to everyone who submitted questions. I know we won't get to them all, but this is a fun little section of the show that we'll have. So first question up is from Mr. Big Mem, and he has two questions for you. First one is, what is your favorite creation to date? And the secondary question, what fragrance from another house do you wish you had created?
Oh man, these are good questions. I like these. So I would say my favorite that I've created to date is either, it's always going to lean to the newest stuff because that's always the thing. You're always most excited about it. Like, it's like 1904 that just came out is one that I've been wearing a ton lately. It's pretty versatile. Sun-Soaked by Meryl Factiv is also one that I really love. But honestly, like the one I probably wear the Oh, nice. Bingo. love it. But the one I wear the most is probably La Petite Prairie. Like that one is just I love it. It's always good. It's like that kind of thing. I love that classic. I really worked hard to try to think about stuff like Eau Sauvage, like the original, not the new one, but like the good one. But
Eau Sauvage versus Johnny Depp.
Versus Johnny Depp. Yeah. Or stuff like that, or Guerlain's Vetiver, things like that I love, and just classic stuff, and try to reimagine it through a modern lens. But it's a type of fragrance that the evolved classic cologne that I love so much. So I just tried to do my, and that's probably the one I wear the most, honestly. So that's out of everything, that's probably, I wouldn't say my favorite, but it's the one I always reach for, if at least.
I think La Petite Prairie is also like very approachable for people who may be unfamiliar with, you know, some of your stuff as well. Cause you, I mean, like, you know, like you have some like heavy hitters in there, and like, yeah, La Petite Prairie is like really, really nice, and definitely along the line of Eau Sauvage, Guerlain Vetiver, etc. You mentioned 1904. That actually, you know, that also kind of relates to another question in here. But, this is from DF in DC. Yeah. Then I'll go back to the back to the other question just because it's there. You couldn't stop yourself from mentioning the St. Louis third wave coffee roasters in your 1904 description. What are your favorite roasters in St. Louis? This is from DF in DC.
I mean, it's Sump. Sump is like God level. They're so good. I've actually got customers who have got turned on to Sump, and they love them now, and they are so good. They've got a place in Nashville now too. They're grown a little bit. They started off really small, but they are just two blocks south of here. Ooh. And they weren't a part of the reason I wanted to move where I live right now. But it's so good. They are so awesome. They're like so unpretentious, but they have really good Ethiopian roasts. They have a really cool like tasting program. Like they have like a brewer or a roaster's recommendation every month if you want to do that. Like if you don't live here, they are, they're really cool. They're really fun. And I feel like they always have really good stuff. We have one called Blueprint that I like as well, and then one called Kova, but I feel like the one that I really love is Sump, and it's not even close. And I highly recommend, if you're a coffee nerd, if you love a third wave roaster, just check out Sump. They are the jam, I promise you.
I will check that out after we're done.
Check in the mail, I hope, again on that one too.
And going back to that first, the second part of that first question, what fragrance from another house do you wish you had maybe created?
Yeah, that's a good one too. Oh man. There's a few by Hans Henley that I really love. I feel like he has a style that I really like. Has that one Blonde. I feel like it's just really cool. And like, it's like the iris, and I feel like iris is like the equivalent of like a really like just like kind of like great jazz trumpet kind of thing, where it's just like so soulful and sad, but also like really cool and just chills you to the bone. And yeah, he's done some that I just feel like are really cool. And I think that that would have to be the one that would I'm gonna be mad because I forgot something, but I'll say like Hans Henley is always a good choice, and I'm gonna go with that one.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like iris in general, it pops at least in the kind of the more, you know, designers, even it's kind of having its day in the spotlight. It's great, and you can do so many things with it. I wonder if that's why.
Could be. I was so bummed when Dior they reformulated Dior Homme, and I bought two bottles of it just because I love that one so much. I was so bummed when they reformulated it.
Apparently they're still making the quote unquote original one in the European market, and I forgot the naming convention, but there are talks given the community or customer response to like make that available again, it like in parallel with that whatever new reformulated DRO is. They should have just called it something else, I think.
Yeah, I know. I don't get that. They got the Sauvage, the Dior Homme. They're really just like they're kicking the pooch on naming, I feel like.
I agree. Gerard, do you want to do the second question from DF and DC? I thought that this is pretty interesting too.
Let's see.
Do you see it?
Okay. Yeah, I see it. So again, from DFNDC, the scents you've created for other brands as a contracted perfumer have mostly been huge crowd pleasers. Is there a different approach you take to those jobs versus creating something for Chatillon Luxe or Merrill Factive?
Yeah, I mean, it's, and like, I really love doing it. And it reminds me of like writing it, like doing, being a copywriter. Like whenever you have a brand or you have something and you, like I could write what I wanted to write, but instead I have to write it through the voice of the existing framework. And like, what the, hey, they want, we want this to sound like this. And it's still fun because it's a challenge because you have to like create something to someone else's standards and you have to like use their voice. And you're like, hey, what would this person or this brand or this like thing sound like? But it's not like the emotion isn't part of it, like what maybe what I would do. And I don't mean that in like a bad way. It's just like these things are deeply personal that I make for my brands. And they're made for a very specific intent, like Chatillon Luxe, obviously about St. Louis and inspired by the history and like kind of like a classic and modern thing. And Merrill Factive is like really personal for me. But like whenever I do something like, you know, like with The Watchmen, it was like not the approach I would have taken for that, but like it's not my brand either. And it's something that I think turned out really well, but not like, you know, not the way I would have gone with it or something like Sea Spice Lime. I mean, like I love it, but it's like, I wouldn't have done that for a million years with my own brand, but I feel like it's kind of fun to be able to do something because like, it was like, even when I played in music and I would be in these serious bands, it was always fun to play like in this friend's band, we'd get a fun pop music band and, you know, we would just play and we would, you know, play songs and cover songs or something that were fun to sing along to or something. And it's still fun to do. And it's cool because it shakes you out of your kind of like what your the ruts you get into a little bit. Sometimes even if you don't take on that style, it's really fun to see something through a different perspective. And it makes you understand perfuming in a different way that you wouldn't have if you would stay like cloistered in your own like little world. So I think it's really great and it's really fun. It's just like, you know, it's just a different thing. It's like, it's a little bit more cold and calculated, but in a way that's like really cool because you can just like look at something. And sometimes when you're detached emotionally, you can really look at a problem and see a lot more aspects of it. And you can really see a lot more like facets and like ways around to solve the problem than if you could, if you were just like, hey, this, I'm just thinking through my own personal perspective. It's really cool to get that wide vision view that you wouldn't be able to do. So I think it's actually helped me a ton grow as a perfumer. And it's really cool to work with these people like, you know, Heather and like, you know, all those people, like all these brands that are like, that I've worked with that are really cool. And they help me to see things through their vision, which is really fun because I get to see things that I maybe wouldn't have thought of before. So it's just like a whole different thing. It's like a whole different ball game. And that's why like I don't really put my brand on that stuff because it's not my brand. It's not my voice. It's not my vision, but it's so cool to be able to help people realize if they have a dream, but they don't have like, maybe they want to get to point A to point C to help them navigate through point B and get to the place where they want to be. And then be able to see that like to please them and to get to give them the thing that they've dreamed of. It's really rewarding in a whole different way that I, you know, wouldn't have thought of before, you know?
Okay, so this is from our friend Chris Cullen over at Katie's Bubbles. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other sense that the creation process was fueled by Malort, or is Le Boisson sur la Porche is the only one?
Oh no, that is truly as far as all the creative processes I've been a part of. Malort with Josh and Chris is maybe the best creative process I've ever experienced in my life. That was.
Ooh.
Yeah, nice. No, because like, yeah, like it was, I feel like they were probably carrying me along. I think I was like, I think they were maybe keeping it together a little bit better than I was, but yeah, that's one of those historical nights of, as far as like fun party nights that you like, yeah, hanging out with Chris and Josh and coming up with that idea was top night for sure.
For those who are not in the know, I've kind of done my research. I've never had Malort, but can you describe what Malort is and maybe the general, you know, story of like how Le Boisson sur la Porche came about?
Well, I think Malort would be if you described like either like one of those kind of like northern European candies that nobody likes, that you're shocked that it's actually called a candy, Like, and you're like, that's a delicious treat for you. And I say that as someone whose sister lives in like the Netherlands. So like, I'm familiar with like,
yep,
with quote candy, you know, but like, so it's like, it's kind of like medicine in a way. It tastes like a weird spicy medicine and you drink it. And it's not like, and that's the funny thing. And you have a hard time, like, especially if you've never had it before, they have a whole, all these videos, look up Malort Face. If you're watching this and you haven't, or listening to this and you haven't, seen them, they're great because it's like so unexpected. It's not even high proof, but it just gets on top of you. But if you like that kind of thing, I like weird tastes and weird flavors, I really took to it. So our Chuck Falzone, who you know, the Restored Razors and community guy as well, he brought it because it was big in Chicago to Maggard Razors like meetup event. And so we were having a blast. And I think Chris is pretty familiar with it too. Actually, I think Chris and Chuck brought it. I think Chuck brought some and Chris brought some.
I think Chris brings it wherever he goes. Yeah, he kind of keeps it on him.
So like we were just there, and that's the problem. There's too many bottles and they had to get taken care of. And so like we were just having, we were BSing and having fun and howling at the moon, as Josh said. And I guess there's an idea for like, his Howling at the Moon nights, where it's like drinking whiskey and then so like a Turkish coffee with like cardamom and like, you know, orange and things like that. So like, what would that night smell like? And it was kind of cool because like Chris came up with his idea and I came up with my idea, and I feel like it kind of, it's like a Rorschach test, kind of like a Fougere's in a way, where it kind of shows you have this base level and then it helps you, and then how you go about it kind of shows your personality as a perfumer. Like, so like, and Chris, I did his, he does like really cool like comforting scents that are like, I think, dense and like really nice, and like just they feel like kind of, I mean, in the best way possible, monolithic, where he just like manages to blend it seamlessly with like the smooth corners. And like, I feel like mine was like maybe a little more like orangey and like kind of like bright, and it punches you up the top kind of like I sometimes do. And I thought it was fun because I was like, hey, this looks like Chris's personality, my personality. Like, and it's just, and it was like one of those first things because it was so early on in the history. And I was like, hey, it made me realize how much of your personality goes into your fragrances as a perfumer when you go directly looking it through your lens, and you just like, you can kind of like, and it goes with scent, because I've read that 40% of your receptive nerves as far as scent goes, and they're your olfactory bulb, can change from person to person. So like what I smell on something, and like in perception is so much of it too. Like there've been studies that show that if you suggest to someone that's gonna smell like something, they will smell the thing you suggest to them. So like there's so much that goes into it that like, it's so like, it can be so variable that I feel like that was the kind of my earliest lesson in how subjective scent can be, like how incredibly subjective it is, and how people can smell different things and how you can interpret things differently. And so it was not only fun, not only did I love Malort, but also I got to have a great experience as a perfumer as well. So it was like win-win-win, you know.
Oh, and just for those not familiar, because I think it was a while ago when it first came out, Le Boisson is, in English, it's porch drinks. So you guys have seen the creation of porch drinks, which I think was only, you can only get it through Josh Carnivus, who I'm not sure if Carnivus and Richardson are still active currently, but they used to make some great, some good brush, was it aluminum and titanium brush handles? Mm-hmm. So
Stainless steel.
So all sorts of. Sorry, I just said metal. Metal brush handles.
And well, funny story. I had a steel one, and I had a crack in my old sink because I dropped it one time. And it totally cracked the porcelain. But you know, I got no idea.
They are heavy. Oh, they can be.
Yeah, I mean, it'll survive nuclear winter for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Malort. I try it. I've never tried it, but I would try it.
But that's I think it's more and more foodie available in me. Now. Used to be hard to get, but I think you can get it. I don't know. Maybe I'm close to Chicago, so I'll get it more easily. But, you know, I mean, it's worth a shot. You might hate it, but you will have an experience. You'll be able to tell.
I'll take a shot of it.
It's. I'm looking at it right now. It's still available on Katie's Bubbles.
Nice.
Porsche drinks and then just drinks.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's which is the what, just the fragrance version of
the post shave and then the eau de toilette. Yeah. Nice. So There we go.
Yeah, you should drink some more Malort, Sean, and see what else you come up with.
No. Why would you? You should just, you know, grab other spirits and then see where that path would lead you. And, you know, absinthe. But it's the same thing, right? Like that the big active ingredient in Malort and absinthe is the wormwood, supposedly. I don't know. I don't drink. So, but I believe that's the key thing, right?
But it's also, isn't that like poison? So like, that's the thing where like, you have to like, I thought that was a big thing with absinthe. If you got it from like Europe, certain places, you get it with real wormwood in it. And then like, it was like poisonous or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I
do remember. Yeah. It makes you go blind. Like, I mean, that's, yeah. I remember like kind of like moonshine in the absinthe that's not made in the most, you know, correct way.
Yeah.
can make you go blind. Let's wrap up the community questions with one more, Sean. This one comes from M2 Shaves. Of all the scents you've done, which one would you like to redo or refine?
Well, it's kind of funny. Like I did, when I did Treachery for Meryl Factive, it was kind of in a way revisiting Gratiot Lake Square. So it was like, it had leather, you know, there were spices, but when I did Gratiot Lake Square, it was, like when I was still really early on, I was using a few pre-made bases and stuff like that. And so I made it from the scratch, like from scratch, from the ground up, added some whiskey to it, you know, did some stuff that like I thought would kind of make it a more mature scent, like maybe more mature in like my development and more like maybe a little bit more edgy, a little bit more like, you know, feeling a little more bold. But, you know, I think that is, I think I've kind of done that. I think that I would like to revisit something like Champs de Lavande or Lavande Poivre, those ones that were like a little more, there were a lavender scent. I think I kind of like to do a lavender scent, but I haven't had an idea how to do it yet. So I would like to come up with another lavender scent, but.
Malort,
yeah. Done. All right, guys.
We're
at the liquor store.
Take five. We'll come back.
Lavande de Malort.
Yeah.
who made this?
Yeah.
John, this is why we are not in perfumery, okay? Yeah. Like, we just throw out bad ideas.
You shut your mouth. This is a brilliant idea. Yeah. And Sean will execute it. I trust him.
Oh gosh.
It's funny because I do have some of those, but I have sitting in my place. I'm like, I have little bottles. I'm like, I make them. I'm like, this is going to be terrible, but I have to try it just to see what happens.
It's like lavender, gasoline, and taint.
Yes. Yeah. More experience. The taint is always involved with experience.
Yeah. Before we hit the, record button. Yeah. My real question was, how has the past year and a half been for you creatively and maybe logistically, but really more creatively? Because you had just launched Meryl Factive last year, and then it basically seemed that everyone shut down. So
yeah,
just a little bit of comment on that and that the challenge.
Yeah, Meryl Factive launched April 2020. So it was like the worst time ever to launch a new house, especially luxury. So it launched with a whimper, and I can't complain. Things were super slow. It was pretty dire. And, you know, it's one of those times where, you know, you're happy that you don't do this full time because at least I have a paycheck. But honestly, that all that spare time and like the low demand during the early days of the pandemic, just like it pushed me into a creative like frenzy, really, because I was kind of like, what else are you going to do? Also, if you're socially distancing and you're in lockdown, what better place to do that than in your perfume studio? So like, I kind of just jumped in there. I really like, now's the time to explore all the things that I've ever wanted to explore, tear down to the most basic concepts, to really think things out and think, what do I want to do with these brands? What do I want to do with myself? How do I want to grow? What materials do I want to explore? So I just kind of like took it as a chance to really, you know, do some great work. And like, I came out with like a ton of scents in 2020, and it was so much fun. And that's when I started creating for other people too. And it was like, I was working from home for my other job. So Hopefully, I'm sure they won't be listening because they don't really care about my business at all, and that's fine because like I don't really want them to. But like so like it was cool working from home because some days I have so much to do, I will work way into the night. Some days I don't have anything to do. So if I have nothing to do, I would just go down to my studio and start working, you know, because it's like, I mean, I got a guilt-free because I'm like, I pull all-nighters sometimes. Like if I don't have anything to do in the afternoon, if I go in the studio, it all evens out in the wash. But like, yeah, I got to kind of do that and kind of like juggle those two things a little bit. And there were some challenges, obviously, I'm sure other people say as well, packaging stuff because of, you know, the trade embargoes, and then also even more with logistics, like, you know, I had to buy a full pallet of bottles the other day because like it was for the Merrill Factive line, like the bottles were, I couldn't buy them by the box anymore. So I had to buy a giant, massive pallet full of bottles. And it was just like the scariest thing I've done because it was like the most money I've ever spent on anything at once. Cause like even my car, I'm making payments on it, you know? So it's like, you don't get to make payments on a pallet of bottles. So it was like terrifying, but it was like, you know, it's one of those things where you, I feel like, you know, you have challenges and you overcome them, and it's part of being a small business anyways. So I think that there's a lot of comfort in things you can control in a time where things are out of control. And one thing I could control is being able to make fragrances and being able to create things that I love and be able to, you know, come up with ideas and make them a reality. So in a way it was very comforting and really inspired me creatively. I hate to sound like I'm like, you know, tragedy really made me inspired and was a great thing for me. But like, sometimes when you're at the worst of times, you have choices. You can either like spiral down or you can, you know, you can rally and you can find the best in yourself. And I feel like I tried my best. I mean, nobody was perfect to everybody. I feel like at low points, but I feel like I did a really good job finding the best in me. And I feel like it was a really good time. Everybody found a reckoning. I feel like everybody kind of inspected who they were, what they wanted out of life, who, like what they wanted to achieve. And for me, I think that's something I kind of needed in the crossroads at that time where I was like launching a new brand, things like that. And I feel like maybe Merrill Factive and Chateau and Luxe wouldn't be as well defined if it wasn't for the pandemic in a way, because I kind of realized now's the time I have the opportunity to sit down and think, what do I want to accomplish with both of these brands?
So thank you for answering that. I mean, so then to modify my question, what would we not have seen in the past 18 months if things were just normal?
Well, definitely fewer scents, that's for sure. I probably wouldn't have been as gung-ho about trying to work with other brands and be like a contract perfumer, because like it's kind of a thing at first where it's like it feels very daunting to take on. And once I got that under my belt, now that I'm back in the office, I still have an idea of what it's like to work with people and how to implement the stuff I've learned as like a creative in a agency into like the day-to-day, like, you know, working with someone else in like the fragrance industry, because in the end it is both a creative process. And yeah, so now that I have the process like nailed down, I feel like that is a thing that like, I'm so glad I had the opportunity to learn about it, but I would never have done it if it would have been like the way I am now, because I just would have thought new thing to learn, not interested, too much time, I'm scared of change, that kind of thing. So yeah, so I'm really glad that I took the chance on doing that. It's hard to, you know, sometimes think about through other people's perspective, but it definitely helps for sure.
As we're winding things down, Sean, are there any upcoming releases that you could share with us, or anything that's coming in the near future that you'd like to tease to the listeners of the show?
Yeah, the next two I have are Merrill Factive releases. I have a couple in Chateau Luxe, but not anything I should probably talk about yet. But like Merrill Factive has one called Sagan Dahlia, and that's a Siberian rhododendron. I am terrified of saying that word because it's like one of those things you get a mental block. You never say it. And I hate it. But anyways, it's like this really cool, like rare thing. I was able to get a hold of some and I made this batch. And it was like such a cool thing because it was like kind of like almost touch coniferous, like kind of fruity, like is it not what you expect from that flower? And I combine that with a Tagette Marigold, which is like, again, kind of fruity, but also kind of like, I wouldn't say watery, but it kind of adds this like kind of like freshness to it. And I added some plum, some Tobacco Absolute that has a couple different kinds of labdanum. There's immortelle and honey. So it's just this big, thick fragrance. And I'm really excited about it because it's like, it's very much a natural material showcase. I never do all natural stuff, but this is more heavily naturally leaning. And I feel like if you like stuff like Hiram Green and stuff like that, I feel like it's going to be like kind of up your alley. I'm pretty excited about that. And I also got a charred barrel, like a 1 liter for a batch of Treachery. So I'm doing a barrel aged Treachery. Since it's a whiskey fragrance, I put it in a charred barrel. I'm aging it in there. So I've got a few months in it and it's kind of going. I haven't checked in a few weeks, but it's starting to really start. You're starting to get that charred, like especially at the beginning, get a smoky hint and everything feels a lot more bold at the top. So I'm really excited to, you know, see how that one turns out.
Hmm. Is that a flanker?
No.
It's a flanker, yes.
I mean.
I'm becoming everything I hate.
Gotcha.
Barrel-aged treachery.
All this gotcha journalism. I knew it.
It is treachery. I mean, honestly, like it's still treachery. It's just a little tweak on it. So, I mean.
It totally is.
I think you got a flanker on your hands.
I got a flanker.
That's flanker. Not. I don't know.
What would you call it then? Treachery.
I don't have oh god
treachery black.
It's funny, it's like one of those things where you think you hate something and then suddenly you're like, no, you live that every day. You're like,
I've become what I hate the most.
And then you rethink everything in your life.
That's hilarious.
Sorry, totally derailed you sharing a beautiful thing. Yeah. There's a question I meant to slip in there with the listener questions, but the term for like, because you're a word guy, right? So terminology between indie perfumer versus niche perfumer, like is there a difference, or like what, how do you, yeah, like what do you think?
It's tough because like everybody has a different one. There's like a bunch. I define it as independent. And I define it by the way that the Institute of Art and Olfaction defines it for their awards, because that just, it's just easier. And I think it makes sense where independent house is owned by the perfumer, or at least part of the owning is by the perfumer. Whereas niche could be an independent house, but niche is like just going to be something that's, the strict definition was like limited distribution. So like niche, you would have to really work hard to find it. I think it's evolved much in the way that like the term indie music evolved, where it was like originally independent label, then it turned out to be something that just was kind of off the mainstream. I feel like that's how niche has evolved. And I feel like that's why independent perfumers have become a buzzword, because that's a way to say like this person has more control over the process.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people though, there's that thing where like, some people think independent perfumers and indie perfumers are like those, like kind of like those perfume oil companies that do like they do like more gourmand oriented stuff. And sometimes they do makeup and it's kind of like more that oriented. And so like, I kind of had people do that reach out, like, are you in indie? And I'll do it. And they're like, how come you don't have perfume oils? I'm like, oh, well, I meant like I'm independent. Like, you know, I don't have this is my company, like it's mine, I own it, I run it, I do everything. But so I've learned about that a little bit, and I guess that's the thing. But everybody has a definition about things, but I feel like the strictest definition, and I think the one that it makes the most sense, is say independent perfumer. Independent perfume house is one owned by the perfumer, and that way you're independent to make whatever decisions you want to make.
Okay, that's very helpful. Just sometimes I'm like, I want to use it interchangeably. Like, I don't know, there's definitely a nuance there that was worth asking you about it. So thank you for clearing that up.
Well, spread the word, because you know everybody has their own definition, and I like that one. So let's be team perfumer owned on that one.
I like words too. So you know, more clarity, honestly. But yeah, we'll work together on that. But Sean, I think, I know we've taken up a lot of your time, but thank you so much for joining us for the podcast today. It's really been a pleasure getting to know you and just hearing about, you know, how business has been for both Châtillon Luxe and Mayor Effective.
Well, cool. It's a blast. Yeah, I haven't done anything like this in a while. And it's always fun to talk about perfume and stuff with people because you don't even like, you know, my girlfriend pretends to be interested and she likes to smell the stuff, but there's only so much she can handle talking about this kind of thing. So I'm so glad to have someone to talk to that actually cares about this kind of thing.
We both have wives and I'm not going to speak for John, but I am in saying that I'm sure they both feel the same way. Our wives feel the same way.
For sure. For sure. We're all in the same boat here. So we can all just nerd out about perfumery and shaving stuff together.
Where it's like we all have, you know, bottles of fragrances and you're just and they don't. And yes, it's just like here we are. Like, this is what it's come down to.
She has like Burberry and then all of my stuff is her collection. So it's like whenever I smell her wearing Burberry, I'm like, you know, I hear you got some other stuff in there, you know.
Nope. I see nothing else.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, Sean, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah.